not corporations. Rick Smith. We're talking about the time ago.
Time ago. So JP Morgan put out a note to investors today. I find it kind of interesting that JP Morgan's telling their folks that they have valid reason for caution when it comes to making investing decisions on Trump's tweets about the major breakthroughs with China. They write, quote, doesn't seem like anything was actually agreed to at the dinner, and White House officials are contorting themselves into pretzels to reconcile Trump's tweets, which seem, if not completely fabricated, then grossly exaggerated with reality. And that's the question. I mean, the LA Times yesterday, the headline, he said, she said. We really don't know what was agreed to, well, if anything, other than the Chinese say they're going to buy some of our agricultural products, which, again, not a huge win. It's something they need anyway. And here to share some thoughts on maybe how he saw the weekend's events and where things are going, I've asked Andy Green to come talk with us. He's managing director for the economic policy team at the Center for American Progress. Andy, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So any surprise J.P. Morgan's telling people, you know, be leery of the tweets?
I think that's good advice. We see a consistent pattern of a whole lot of nothing out of this administration. They are really good at negotiating a bad deal, a weak deal, and certainly not one that is at all anywhere in the interests of working Americans and the environment and the public interest.
Now, I've had some people tell me that, you know, this weekend was a big win for Trump. You got the Chinese to blink. How do you see it?
Well, I don't know. You and I seem to blink lots of times every day. I look at the sand in my eyes, and I tend to blink a couple of times. I mean, look, President Trump got nothing out of the Chinese. Even more, he's not asking for anything that is actually, well, let's put it this way. He is asking for things that have real consequences for American corporations. And let's not, you know, nobody likes intellectual property theft or technology transfer or a theft, forced technology transfer. These things are not good for American companies and not good for American competitiveness. But where on the agenda are labor rights? Where on the agenda is environmental destruction? The race to the bottom, the structure of the U.S.-China trade relationship, it's bad for Americans and it's bad for Chinese folks. But, of course, Trump's not talking about any of that.
Yeah. Well, where's the currency manipulation?
I keep going back
to the campaign. He said day one, going to label him a currency manipulator.
Oh, it's a complete fraud. I mean, Trump slapped these 10% tariffs on millions of goods, which, all right, that's gotten China's attention. Has it gotten anybody's attention that the renminbi has declined by 10%? So, you know, talk about no impact on the U.S.-China trade deficit. And, as frankly, it's gotten bigger under Trump.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, he tweeted out today that, you know, he's the tariff man. He's the guy. And we're reaping billions off of it.
Well, I don't think anybody should sign up for his economics 101 class. The only thing that the tariffs will benefit monopoly power. They'll benefit corporate power in the U.S. if you happen to be a beneficiary. They will disrupt some supply chains. It will get the attention of the Chinese, who will see some of their imports less, competitive here. They will change the mix of our trade. But we have to remember, you slap too many tariffs on these things. The Chinese, their ability to lower their currency. You know, Paul Volcker used to joke that 10 minutes of currency maneuver changes will undo 10 years of trade negotiation. He's right.
So how do you, to me, that's really the big issue is the currency manipulation. And I'll be up front. I'm someone who thinks, you know, we need to have the tariff arrow in the quiver. It is, in my view, it is, you know, a tactic to help, move a strategy forward. But, you know, the currency manipulation part of it is the bigger part. And I keep asking, why can't we simply, follow suit since we have the reserve currency?
Oh, I completely agree with you. We need to get serious about these challenges. We need to use all the arrows in our quiver. But I think we need to be asking for the right things and have the right orientation. And we need to be going in the right direction. And what Trump has been doing, his stated purpose is to fight for things that will make it easier for U.S. multinational companies to operate in China, whether it's to export, move their jobs over there, or to obtain more intellectual property rents in China. Look, companies can operate in China. I'm not opposed to that. But if you want to say that you're fighting for the American middle class, if you're fighting for labor rights and higher wages and a better environment and things are going to make for middle class life possible here in Ohio and Pennsylvania and all across America, you've got to be addressing the things like currency manipulation, like labor rights, like environmental destruction, all things that, quite frankly, those are things that the ordinary Chinese workers suffer from just as well. When their currency is depressed, they can't buy as much of the stuff from that we export. When they have terrible labor rights, they're not getting the wages that they deserve. When they have no environmental protection, they're choking on terrible air and poisoning, poisoned water. So, we've got to get beyond a negotiation where the U.S. side and the Chinese side are fighting for how to distribute the Wall Street profits and actually figuring out a way to make life better for ordinary people, both here and around the world.
That is an excellent point. It's something we've talked about over the years, and that I'm not opposed to the Chinese having jobs, and I'm not opposed to Mexican workers or any of that. I think we should all be somewhat figuring out how we work together to hold these multinationals accountable, because at the end of the day, corporate America has done a masterful job of country hopping for the cheapest labor and most lax environmental standards. You're spot on.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. Since the 1990s, we have more than doubled the global labor force, like the number of people who are able and willing to work for jobs. Not out of any great strategy, but, we did things like the Berlin Wall fell. China ended its economic isolation. India and Mexico and other countries that used to be what's known as import substitution countries, which had high tariff walls and said, no, we're not going to export to you. We're going to do the other way around. All that changed. And so from the early 1990s through today, you just have a lot more people on the labor markets. We've had a neoliberal direction of economic policy that said, well, just let the markets do whatever they do. We'll let capital do whatever it does, and we won't do very much for labor, the environment, the other policy priorities, currency, et cetera, unlike the Bretton Woods regime that had some vision about that, something like that. And lo and behold, wages in America have fallen. Workers, we always like to say, if you just have to fight by the same rules, we can compete. Well, when somebody's making a couple of dollars or pennies an hour, I don't care what the rules are. We've got to make it so that we're investing in people and making it so that we're raising standards really, all around.
Yeah, it's an excellent thing, because I've heard that argument 1,000 times. We can compete with anyone. Really? Anyone? Even slave labor?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's why we have things, in America, we have basic standards. And frankly, where we don't, you see capital racing there and pulling down standards from elsewhere. We have right-to-work states in this country there's no rights and no real, benefits from the right to work. This is about protecting, employer power to crush collective bargaining. But, you've seen over time companies pulling jobs from the north down into largely the south. Now, we need to do a lot more to take care of those things as well. And that brings me to a lot of other things we need to do in the U.S. to make sure that we're both competitive, growing productivity, but making sure that we're building the middle class. Things like a lot stronger antitrust enforcement so that large companies aren't able to monopolize markets and not shut out competitors and, frankly, squeeze the wages of workers at the same time.
No, it's exactly what we were talking about last night. In that, Bloomberg had an article. I don't know if you saw it, where they pointed out that we have just this monopolization going on. They said competition is dead when you've got, I think it was like two corporations control 90% of the beer sales in this country, and like five banks have like half of the nation's assets, and it just went through all of these different scenarios, 75% of Americans have no choice when it comes to internet access. We're told there's all this competition, yet not so much.
Yeah, no, and the that's exactly right. And we've seen over the last 30 or 40 years, time after time, and area after area, whether it's antitrust policy or financial regulation or labor rights, one after another, we've seen things that shift power towards capital and away from labor and wages. And I'm not trying to be, overly dramatic about that, but this all comes out of a set of fears in the 1970s. Well, the number one problem everyone faces is inflation and wage inflation in particular. So we need to, lower wages and lower inflation and lower prices. Well, they succeeded, and there's no inflation anywhere near on the horizon. Wages have been stagnant and flat, and in many certain circumstances, collapsing for some. And corporate power is making record profits. And what do we have in America? But, a lot of people very unhappy. And if the folks that claim to be on their side, on the left, are not going to be delivering for them, they're going to turn to the authoritarian right. And that's the risk.
And that's a scary thing. Now, going back to this weekend, do you see anything positive coming out of this? Was there anything you said, this is moving us in the right direction? Because here's my fear. My fear is I think Trump is hit a nerve. I think, he stole Labor's message in the 2015-2016 cycle of, we've got to do something about these trade deals. We need, we need to reinvest in manufacturing in the U.S. and, care about American workers. I don't believe that he really does care. And I think that he is so slapdash in his attempt just to get a deal to slap his name, his big magic marker name signature on something, that it doesn't matter what it is. And by doing that, I think he boogers it up and we make things worse.
I completely agree with that. I agree with it on sort of multiple levels. The first level is he's responding to or reflecting and in some ways identifying a deep unhappiness in this country. Now, he's sort of like a broken clock is right twice a day. He's been saying the same thing for 30 years, and it finally became so bad that everybody else looked around and said, hey, that's right. And there's been an increasing amount of actual economic evidence from very mainstream economists saying, no, there was a shock from NAFTA. No, there was a shock from from Chinese trade. And, American policymakers did not respond effectively to protect the wages and stability, economic stability of workers, help them adjust to all those things that basic neoclassical economics 101 says you have to do even if you want very open free trade. So he identified that problem. He is, again, right to do something. The question is, I just think he is unfortunately fallen into the, he's associating with the business Republican community that is going to be fighting for greater corporate power. Now, I think the only modestly good thing is, USTR, U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer, is a serious, competent person. I don't agree with him on everything, but he knows what he's doing. He also is somebody that recognizes the risks to U.S. prosperity from offshoring and a race-to-the-bottom approach. I would like to see progressives be pushing him to do a lot more on the labor and the environment side, because I think there, there is some potential to push him and in that way Trump. And this also was a good thing to see coming out of this weekend, that the negotiations have been taken out of the hands of Mnuchin and the Treasury Department and the jokers that they are associated with, which are really about Wall Street interests and the ability for the large banks to access the market in China, and put in the hands of Lighthizer, who is serious. And so I think that is actually a modestly good sign.
No, I mean, he is, to take, Trump's, he only gets the best people. I can't find that anywhere else other than Bob Lighthizer.
I agree with that.
All the rest seem to just be ideological hacks. I actually have some hope. And I look at the NAFTA 2.0, that there was actually some labor rights that they, that they're pushing Mexico to identify independent unions. I wish they would take that philosophy here at home, but it's nice to see that at least outwardly they somewhat support independent unions.
Exactly. There's a lot more to do in the U.S. NAFTA, right? So you're right to identify some real improvements in that particular area of independent Mexican unions. They did reduce some investor-state dispute resolution, which is an important point of progress. They went backwards on a number of points, whether it's intellectual property protection, environmental and climate issues, regulatory matters, and the enforcement regime on labor is not there. So there's a ways to go on that. But you're right. This is this is a change of direction, and we just need to keep changing the direction a little bit more.
Yeah. Let me ask you last line of questioning, because, you know, I have certain, you know, friends of mine who believe that, you know, what's good for business is good for workers. That, you know, this business friendly mentality that we give them tax breaks, they're going to, you know, they buy the line that if we give them all the tax breaks, that we give them all the subsidies, they're going to reinvest in their businesses and that's going to create jobs. And it's going to have this, you know, this magical snowball effect. But I would argue, if you look at what's happened with GM, we've given them huge amounts of money and they chose to just buy their shares back and they're still leaving. But I'm curious your thoughts on the argument that, you know, what's good for business is good for workers here in the U.S. And we should really be pushing for those kind of policies to protect business.
So I think we have to look at what the rules of the game are, because if the rules of the game are where our workers are actually able to organize and negotiate seriously, and that we have rules that prevent business from taking a race to the bottom approach on things like the environment and whatnot, then there's actually the ability to say, hey, if the economy is doing well, workers have the ability to negotiate for the benefits that companies are earning. And so in those circumstances, absolutely, that's the promise of the labor business capitalism approach that dominated America in the 20th century and whatnot. But if you create a world where workers have no power to negotiate, where all the power is concentrated in the hands of the business side, there's just no incentive for them to do things. And in fact, there's lots of incentives for them to not do things that invest in their workers and create the kind of middle class that, frankly, they will ultimately need to be customers.
Yeah, I mean,
so from the long-term perspective, the argument's right, but you've got to set up the rules correctly. And right now, the rules have swung so far in the direction that, you know, it's you can't make that argument.
Well, and the sad reality is, workers aren't at the table. They're solely on the menu as of right now. And I like Elizabeth Warren's idea of getting, 40% of the board of directors elected by workers. I think that's maybe a step in the right direction.
I 100% agree.
We'll see where that takes us. Andy, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. I'd love to have you back again and talk about this as it continues. 90 days are going to go by quick, and I'm not expecting a lot to get done, but we'll see.
Yeah, thanks. My pleasure.
Good stuff, Andy Green, Managing Director there at the Economic Policy Team, Center for American Progress. You want to check out their stuff, we'll get links out so that you can take a look at it. Quick break, right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
90% of the wealth, 10% of the people.